20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Saturday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks, as always, for being here. Great show for you today. We're going to be going over the Packers' biggest strengths. Excited to break this down. I do want to note that I'm recording this a little bit earlier on Friday at about 2 p.m. on Friday afternoon. So if we get any breaking news Friday night or afternoon, I will not be included in this episode. Same thing is going to be for tomorrow's show as well when we go over the Packers' biggest weaknesses. I got a couple things going on this weekend. We'll be out of town for a little bit. So I just always like to be transparent about that. So if you're wondering again why maybe something's missing, that would be the reason why. Quick shout out to Jeff Plymail for becoming a brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube member. Appreciate you a ton, Jeff. Thanks so much for doing that. If you have not yet had the opportunity to check out those memberships, now is definitely a great time to do so. And I just want to take a moment to shout out our entire Pack-A-Day Podcast team. Yesterday was our 2,500th consecutive day with a podcast, 2,500 consecutive days in a row on the audio side. It's been an unbelievable journey. I was technically episode 2,500 within that. There are multiple episodes a day, so we're well over like 3,500, but I digress. I cannot thank the team enough for their continued dedication and support. And as I say over and over again, and I mean it every single time from the bottom of my heart, as great as they are as podcasters and as Packers aficionados, they're even better people. From beginning to end, anyone that's ever been on the team, I cannot thank them enough. 2,500 consecutive days on the audio podcast without ever missing a single day. Unbelievable stuff, and appreciate them more than words can describe. So to all of you, thank you so much. And to all of you who have been here for those 2,500 days, thank you to you as well. We did get one piece of news and notes prior to me recording on Friday, and that was that the shareholders meeting is going to be July 25th. So if you are a shareholders meeting, or if you're really excited about the transition from Mark Murphy to Ed Policy, that again is taking place on July 25th. With that, let's get into our topic for today, which is the Packers' biggest strengths as an organization. This is a really fun one to go through because I do this each year. If you want to go back and listen to last year's, it's really interesting to kind of go over what we thought, or at least what I thought, were the strengths a year ago and then how they're kind of different from today. Some have certainly carried over, others have not. So not going to spoil it, but it's worth going back and checking that one out if you have the time and effort and energy to do so. But let's start right away with the Green Bay Packers' biggest strengths in 2025. And number one for me is going to start off with consistency. There is an argument to be made, and not that I want to start my strengths and complimentary episode when tomorrow is going to be our weaknesses with a sort of backhanded compliment in any way, but there is an argument to be made that the Packers are the picture of consistency, but that's always in that, you know, 10-7, 11-6, and out in the wild card or divisional round range. Never consistently at the top, never necessarily one or two, and maybe taking those peaks and valleys of being one or two sometimes, but also maybe sometimes having to be 30th or 31st. And instead, they're just right in that, you know, fifth to ninth best team almost every single year. There's an argument to be made about that. That level of consistency, I still feel overall is worth applauding. The fact that they are a winning football team almost every single year, they have a chance at the playoffs. Do they need to be better once they reach that point? No question about it. And we'll talk a lot more about that tomorrow as well. But the fact that they are as consistent as they are, that is a huge strength of this team. The other thing that I want to add right now is the consistency within the organization as is, meaning Brian Gutekunst, Russ Ball, Matt LaFleur, those three are operating with a level of consistency. They know each other well. They've been around for a while now. They're putting together winning teams pretty much every single year. You also have now the consistency at quarterback. Your offensive, defensive, and special teams coordinators have been now back for at least multiple years, Jeff Hafley being the newest of those in his second year. There is a great deal of consistency at the key leadership positions within the organization, and then, of course, at quarterback as well, with Jordan Love going into his third year as a starter and sixth year on the team overall. When you look at that, that has value. When you have a good general manager that's at the top, when you have a really good cap guy, when you have a really good head coach, when you have a good quarterback, when you have all of that structure in place, that can get you a lot of places, and you don't have the volatility that a lot of these organizations have. A lot of these organizations are every 2 to 3 years changing out their quarterback, every 2 to 3 years changing out their head coach, every 2 to 3 years changing out their general manager, to the point where they're just grasping at straws to figure out something, anything that will work at any of those positions. The Chicago Bears are the picture of that exact scenario that has gone on over and over and over, where they've just basically never had a scenario where it's the same coach, general manager, and quarterback that are all in the same timelines all together at the same time. It just never happens. They're constantly trying to figure out a formula that's going to work, and they just can't find it. So the fact that they have, again, consistency as an organization, consistency from a winning standpoint. And then the other thing I'll add on top of this is now over a 3-decade-long string of consistency when you really consider going from Ron Wolf to Ted Thompson to Brian Gutekunst. There has been an overall strategy in place. There's been an overall consistency in the design of what their franchise wants to accomplish, what they want to do in the draft, being a draft and develop team. There's been nuances, and certainly Ron Wolf, Ted Thompson, and Brian Gutekunst all operate a little bit differently than the other ones did, than each other. But still, you've had that same sort of Ron Wolf way that has been baked in. And I talk all the time about like the foundation, right? We'll probably talk about this on another one as well, but the foundation of the team that really Ron Wolf and Bob Harlan and to an extent Mike Holmgren as well built in the early 90s, that foundation is still in place today. And again, there's been some renovations, there's been some changes, there's been some nuance that goes along with that over the course of 3 decades. Football has grown, the Packers have grown as well. But for the most part, that foundation is strong and still in place. And that level of consistency that the Packers have is definitely an overall strength of the organization. And we can continue with number two pretty easily. Every once in a while, I will hear somebody say, well, this would never happen if the Packers had an owner. My goodness, thank Lombardi that the Packers do not have an owner. They are in such a better place overall as an organization because they have the structure that they have in place. And kudos to Mark Murphy, who is now obviously on the way out, for continuing what Bob Harlan has built. And now this will head over to Ed Policy. What the Ed Policy era looks like, your guess is as good as mine. We don't know what that changeover is going to mean. My guess is that Ed Policy is going to handle things very similarly to Mark Murphy and Bob Harlan before him, with probably his own little unique spin on certain things. And I'm sure there's some changes in structure or whatever that he might like to make that he thinks will make the organization get to the next level, or just maybe some operational changes, right? We'll see over time, and we'll see if there's any real structural change, good, bad, ugly, or indifferent that comes along with that. But for now, the fact that they don't have an owner, and the fact that the onus is not on making just making money, period. They like to make money. Let's not sugarcoat over it, right? Like, that's okay. There's still a business, whether there's an operator, like an owner that's operating as an owner or not. And you can make the argument that Mark Murphy and or now Ed Policy are basically just acting as the pseudo owner, but there is more structure in place that gives it a little bit more transparency, that gives it a little bit more of that board of directors, that there's multiple people that are making the decision. It feels a little bit more, democratic, for lack of a better word, where they are voting on things. And it's not just one owner that's making the ultimate decision over and over that's in his best interest or what he thinks is the team's best interest. And the bigger thing here, and again, we'll see what happens with that policy, but no meddling. You know, Mark Murphy was not getting into the, playbook with Matt LaFleur. He was not getting into the free agency. He let Brian Gutekunst be the general manager. He let, basically Matt LaFleur be the head coach. Russ Ball do the salary cap stuff. Those guys were allowed to do their job for what they were hired to do. And in other organizations, that does not take place. And owners are consistently worried and sometimes even superseding what teams are doing on draft days, making it so that a team goes and drafts Bryce Young number one overall, and gives up a bunch of stuff to go do them, or whatever that thing might be. Owners meddle in day-to-day operations, and the less that you can have of that, the better that you're going to be. And the Packers' singular primary goal is still being a winning organization over and over and over again. That's not perfection. That doesn't mean that they are without flaw. That doesn't mean that they are, again, going to make every right decision in a utopian universe with everything being for the fans and for the love of the game and winning and everything like that. But it more often than not is a much better version of that than if you had a owner, or specifically a power-hungry owner, that was meddling in everything. And there may be organizations that have a great owner that maybe operate better than Green Bay. That is within the realm of possibility. But in general, having an owner is a mystery box. You never quite know what you're going to get. Ownership hands can change. There can be stakes of ownerships that are taken over. We've seen that in Milwaukee with the Bucks. Like, you just don't know what that's going to mean. You know, certain teams don't want to spend certain money. Hello, Milwaukee Brewers. They're just in it for entertainment and a summer of fun and entertainment, or whatever it is that Mark Antanasio said. I think what Green Bay has is a much better version than anything that a owner could give you more often than not. Number three is also a version of this. It all kind of lives within the same world, but it is cash flow. I cannot stress to you enough how important it is that Green Bay is cash rich when it comes to their organization, but more importantly, when it comes to being able to do free agent deals. There are organizations that either due to the ownership and the ownership not wanting to do that, or the teams that just don't have the money up front to do some of this stuff, that are either unwilling or unable or just not desiring to give a lot of these huge signing bonuses up front in contracts. And the ability to do that grants Green Bay a lot of different things that they can do from a contract structure standpoint to keep them where they can put a very competitive team out on the field every single year. It puts them at a competitive advantage over some teams. Could other teams maybe have a little bit more of an advantage on that? Sure, but Green Bay has not shown any unwillingness to spend that money when it comes to signing big free agents. Going back again to the structure that Bob Harlan and company built, Ron Wolf built when they went out and signed Reggie White. We've seen that with Charles Woodson, Za'Darius Smith, Xavier McKinney, Josh Jacobs, amongst others. Green Bay is willing to go out and make those big free agent moves and spend a lot in cash in any given year. And these big contracts, specifically for guys like Jordan Love and Aaron Rodgers, when they sign these huge contracts up front, are coming with massive signing bonuses that are paid a lot of times in cash up front. And if you don't have the cash resources to do that, you just can't make those moves. And it can get you into some salary cap situations as time goes on. So the fact that the Green Bay Packers operate very, what I would say is ethically and logically, and just with a sort of a good financial compass, not doing anything over their means and making sure that they have a emergency fund in place and that they continue to grow. Mark Murphy will sometimes still, even though I think the general consensus on Murphy has been overwhelmingly positive and rightfully so as he exits and just had the draft and everything like that. There's still, and Aaron Alice, I still love this. Every single slutting meme, I am all for it. But there's still like the slutting meme of like, oh yeah, he did a great job building Titletown. Titletown is so important to the structure of what Green Bay is doing. Green Bay is, and we're going to get to this one in just a moment as well, but they can sell at the stadium every single week. And there's certain things that they're going to be able to do. But you want to continue to have different avenues of cash flow coming into your organization so that they can continue to have the money that they need to have state-of-the-art facilities and to spend big money on those contracts and to do everything that they can do to stay competitive in what is, well, a unbelievable market, can still be a bit of a smaller market at times in Green Bay. And they're at no disadvantage right now because they continue to operate with different revenue streams that bring in different avenues of money. And a big part of that right now is the Titletown District and the things that are around Lambeau as well. That will be a lasting thing, lasting impression of what Mark Murphy has left this team is that entire Titletown District around Green Bay. So those things are very positive, and it continues to give Green Bay a ton of cash flow overall. Number four is the fan base. And we just talked about how important it is that, you know, they can continue to basically be a team that's operating with good cash flow in a small market. They know every single year that Lambeau is going to be sold out time after time after time in the regular season. Now, we are seeing more opposing fans that are getting in because it is becoming a destination where every opposing fan wants to get to and go see a team or their team play at Lambeau Field. Understandable. I would want to too if I was a fan of the Chargers and the Chargers were playing in Lambeau. Heck yeah, I would want to go to Green Bay and see the Chargers play in Lambeau or whatever team that might be. So I get it. I understand it. But still, that stadium is sold out every single week. It really is at no risk. They have, you know, they could build probably double the capacity at that stadium, and they still have the season ticket holder line that they would be able to sell out those season tickets, right? It's remarkable what that fan base does, that how much they care about the team. We see it every day with the passion of fans here on Pack-A-Day and obviously all throughout the Packer sphere. And I think their ability to have those loyal fans week in and week out, year in and year out, and be able to count on that and know that 3, 5, 10 years from now, regardless of where the team is at from a win-loss standpoint, they're still going to be able to sell tickets. They're still going to have support, and they're not going to have to worry about that is such a huge aspect of what Green Bay does and just why Green Bay and the Packers are so unique and so amazing because of the fan base being really integrated with the community in Green Bay and the Green Bay Packers. It's all just basically one big family. It all feels connected, and that certainly makes it a different level of special. We'll be right back. Number five, we've talked about kind of the organization as a whole so far. I want to get into some of the things that this current team has that's more of a strength, and that is versatility and depth. I've talked about probably on too many different occasions. I think there's two different ways that you can potentially win a Super Bowl in the NFL. One is having three or four just incredible level players that are really just kind of dragging the rest of the team. The other team, the rest of the team's got to be pretty good as well. It can't be bad, but the four are just elevating you to an entirely different level. The Chiefs, to some extent, are a great example of this. Good coaching, right? A good atmosphere, good culture, everything like that, with some good players like a George Karlaftis or, you know, players like that that are good, but maybe not going to elevate you in any real way. But players like Patrick Mahomes, Chris Jones, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill before, Tyrann Mathieu to some extent, those players have elevated them in their Super Bowl seasons to an entirely different stratosphere than the rest of that team, which is fine slash good, but it's the key players on that team that elevate them to Super Bowl success. The other version is you just have good players everywhere. I think of the Nick Foles Eagles as kind of the poster child of this, where they had a lot of really good players on that team and depth everywhere. They didn't have any weak spot on their roster outside of potentially Nick Foles at quarterback, ironically, but they were really, really good everywhere. And that to me is another way that if you just don't have a weakness that teams can exploit, and if you're just a little bit better on the aggregate at almost every position, they might have one or two positions at you where they have a superstar, but everywhere else, you're just going to be better. And again, there's no real place to exploit. That's another way that you can have an opportunity to win a Super Bowl. And I'm not saying that Green Bay is necessarily there quite yet, but you look at this roster right now and the depth that they have pretty much throughout of it. There are a couple exceptions at the moment, especially depending on what happens with Jaire Alexander at corner. But there are a couple positions, but overall, you feel good about the quarterbacks, the running backs, the receivers, the tight ends, the depth along the offensive line. Defensive line, maybe some question marks, but still, I think overall, especially at defensive end, you've got four or five players that can potentially go out there and play. They seem very excited about Colby Wooden, Carl Brooks, even Brinson in the sixth round, I think is a really fun player. Of course, Clark and Wyatt. The linebacker core looks much better, especially with Edgerrin Cooper, bringing in Isaiah Simmons, Christian Welch back, etc. The cornerback group, again, depending on Jaire. And then, of course, the safeties are super deep. You feel good about all the specialists. There's nothing that you look at this team and be like, how are they going to survive with that particular group? And especially if Jaire is back at corner, even more so the case, because that would be one that you might look at and say, I'm still not sold on it. With Jaire, I'm completely sold on it. So to me, this is a team that has depth everywhere. And the versatility, all of these different players that can play different positions, so many offensive linemen that can play 3, 4, or 5 spots along the offensive line, running backs that can catch the ball to the backfield and even line up outside, wide receivers that can line up in the backfield. Savion Williams is this new gadget that they're going to have that can line up a little bit of everywhere. Tight ends that can line up as H-backs. You've got defensive ends who can line up as tackles. Tackles who can line up at ends. You've got Colin Oliver who can be a linebacker or a pass rusher. You've got linebackers who can blitz, who can cover, who can play all three linebacker spots. Receivers, going back to that, who can play all the wide receiver spots that you want them to play. Safeties who can play corner. Corners who can play safety. You have this unbelievable versatility within the roster, and that really makes them unique as well. And I do think there is definitely a strength in that. As you get injuries through the course of the year, it just gives you options to where you can play these guys, and I think that is going to pay off for them in a major way. Number six is youth. Spoiler alert, you might see this one on tomorrow's episode as well, but this is a young man's game. You do have to have some experience, but this Green Bay team has two consecutive playoff berths. They've had three playoff games in the last 2 years. It's not like they are a bottom feeding team that does not have playoff experience over the last couple of years. Now they need to learn from those playoff experiences, losing two of those three games, and figure out ways to get better from that. But this is a team that has gone through some real legitimate ups and downs and some heartache and some heartbreak and some big playoff games. And those things usually are going to pay off big as players get to the prime of their careers. You look at the age of the players on this team. You have two players over the age of either 30 years old or older. 33-year-old Brandon McManus and 30-year-old Matt Orzech. Those are the only players in their 30s, and both of them are specialists where it matters a whole heck of a lot less. I could care less what age Brandon McManus is because he's not going to be put in positions where it matters. Just make kicks. And the same thing with Matt Orzech as a long snapper. It will not matter what his age is, and he has really settled in as a long snapper. The ages for those two do not matter. Outside of specialists, they do not have a player in their 30s. They have two 29-year-olds, Elgton Jenkins and Kenny Clark, both still playing at a pretty high level, all things considered. You have two 28-year-olds who, as of right now, aren't even guaranteed to be on the team, Zane Anderson and Jair Alexander. Now, hopefully Jair is, if you know they can stay healthy and they can figure out an agreement, everything like that. Zane Anderson's going to have to compete for that spot primarily because he is 28 years old, and certainly there's no like ceiling or upside there that he's trying to reach. You kind of know what he is, but you have two 28-year-olds. That's it. And then everyone else is 27 years old or younger. In fact, you still have a pretty small grouping of players who are even 27. Devontae Wyatt, Christian Welch, who may or may not make the team, Keyshawn Nixon, Johnny Lumpkin, who will not make the team, Josh Jacobs, Mecole Hardman, who may or may not make it, Rashawn Gary, and Aaron Banks. You've got eight 27-year-olds. Everyone else is 26 or younger, which is, again, unbelievably remarkable. I don't know if they're going to end up being the youngest team in the NFL again or anything like that, but they are a very young, very talented team that is still all pretty much in the primes of their career and should have continued opportunities for growth, not regression. Number seven, we've covered pretty well already, but it's the culture of the organization. And this is what I kind of mentioned earlier with the going back to Bob Harlan and Ron Wolf and the culture that this team has built. And I still think overall the locker room's in a really good place. And this also kind of involves the way that the Packers draft and bring in free agents. They're not bringing in divas. They're not bringing in players who don't fit in that locker room. They'll maybe take a chance on a character, flaw or whatever here or there, or somebody that maybe isn't a perfect 1A fit. But for the most part, they are keeping that locker room sacred. And they want guys that are Packer people, that love football, that enjoy watching film, that are going to enjoy being in Green Bay, Wisconsin, because it's all football junkies, right? Like, those are the type of people that they are looking for. Knock on wood, I can't remember the last time the Packers, was it like Latroy Guyon, where there was like a suspension for a player that came from the league? I'm probably forgetting somebody somewhere in there, just because sometimes that stuff goes out of mind or whatever. But like, for the most part, again, knock on wood, this has been a team that has done things the right way, that has got the right people, that care about football, and that culture matters. At some point, as I've talked about in the past, you have to have a couple, a-holes on your team that maybe change it up on the field a little bit. But overall, I like that philosophy. You don't want a team of, 53 Mother Teresas, but you do want a team of players who care about the game, that want to be at their best, that want to be Green Bay Packers, that want to dive into the tape and that care about the game. And it does seem for the most part that that is what they do. And I do think that that culture is very important. Number eight is the pro personnel department. I cannot say enough about how well the pro personnel department has done in so many different ways. When you go big free agent shopping, you better not miss. You are investing a huge chunk of money and resources into these big free agents. And the biggest two that they've signed recently, Xavier McKinney and Josh Jacobs, it's hard to do it better than that. Even the big, splash that they made prior to that when they signed the four big players, meaning Adrian Amos, Preston Smith, Za'Darius Smith, and Billy Turner, that would have been tough to do better than what they did in that huge spending spree in free agency. And then it's not only that, like, you have to hit on your big name free agents, right? But you also have to be able to hit on some of the smaller ones and the little moves here and there. Finding Keyshawn Nixon when they found him initially on a vet minimum, $0 signing bonus, $0 guarantee, literally legally per the NFL CBA could not have paid him any less. They got him on a deal and got him in Green Bay, and he turned into not only an all-pro kick returner two times, but now their starting corner on what was a really good defense last year with Jeff Hafley. And they seemed to really found something with him being an outside corner. Rasul Douglas, picking him up off of a practice squad. Devondre Campbell, picking him up on a one-year, $3 million deal when he became a first-team all-pro that season. Now, after that, wasn't so great, but that one-year, $3 million all-pro season, pretty darn good. Alan Lazard, finding him off of Jacksonville's practice squad. Bo Melton off of Seattle's practice squad. Chris Brooks just hanging around, doing nothing. He got released by Miami, And Green Bay brought him on the practice squad and then quickly recognized that this was a 53-man player and elevated him to the active roster. Brandon McManus was obviously out there for reasons, which we all know, but Green Bay had the ability to bring him in. They brought him in. That was a huge signing last year. Matt Orzech has settled in as a long snapper. We'll see what Aaron Banks, Mecole Hardman, Isaiah Simmons, and Nate Hobbs are able to bring this year. Even trades too, bringing in Malik Willis last year for a 7th-round pick was a probably a playoff-saving move this past year. I don't think Green Bay makes the playoffs last year if they don't go and trade for Malik Willis for a 7th-round pick before the season starts. I don't think Sean Clifford or any other quarterback off the street was going to be able to win those games that Malik Willis won last year. So the pro personnel department continues to do unbelievable work, and we'll see if that can continue, hopefully, specifically with Banks and Nate Hobbs to a lesser extent, if they can find some gold in Mecole Hardman and Isaiah Simmons, maybe some diamonds in the rough. That would be great too. But Hobbs and Banks, of course, are going to be the big ones there. We'll be right back. Number 9 is process and conviction. Sometimes, again, this is not perfect. Sometimes they are maybe a little bit too process-driven, a little bit too convicted in their philosophy. But Brian Gutekunst specifically believes in a draft and develop philosophy. He believes in best player available. And he also believes in, you know, doing things the Packer way and leads by a way of what he thinks is going to be best for the Green Bay Packers. And sometimes you get into these really tough situations like what's going on with Jair Alexander right now. It's fair, it's legitimate, but he stands convicted in what he needs to do for what's best for the Packers. Obviously, trading Aaron Rodgers was a piece of that. Prior to that, when they traded Brett Favre away, not Goody, but when Ted Thompson did that, they are convicted and process-driven in what they need to do what's best for the Green Bay Packers. Sometimes they're going to get that wrong. Sometimes they will make mistakes in those moves, and sometimes they will move on from players like Casey Hayward or Micah Hyde, and it's not going to work out. Again, I am in no way, shape, or form saying that these things are perfect, but I do appreciate that they have a process-driven formula for how they want to get better, for how they want to build this team, and they stay convicted by it. Because as soon as you don't have that conviction and you just start kind of doing things outside of that, then you kind of lose your vision. You lose kind of all that foundation that has been built for you already. And I do appreciate that they stand by what they believe in. It's not a perfect formula. At least it has not been. I don't believe that there is a perfect formula out there. The Eagles are certainly reinventing some things right now. And we see some teams trying to copycat Philly, and we'll see if teams can do that. But, and again, they need to have better results at the highest level, getting some trophies, hopefully back to Green Bay. But I do appreciate that they are process-driven and convicted within that process when consistently making decisions at all layers of the organization. Number 10 is a fun one. Xavier McKinney and Josh Jacobs. This is a strength of the team. No question about it. They found two phenomenal players in free agency last year. Quite arguably, their two best players. A back of the roster, back of the defense safety that can do absolutely everything, that is an unbelievable leader, that fits perfectly within the culture and DNA of the team, and gives you a unbelievable safety that fits perfectly in Jeff Hafley's defense. It was so funny last year when Jeff Hafley was kind of describing his perfect back of the, you know, defense safety, that post safety position. And you just put all of the like things down and you're like, who does that remind you of? And it's like, oh yeah, Xavier McKinney, who just happens to be a free agent. And Green Bay recognized it. They went out and got him, and it has been a match made in heaven so far. And that has been such a wonderful development for the Packers defense. And he's really kind of the guy in Green Bay right now when it comes to defensive football. And then on the offensive side, going out and getting a replacement for Aaron Jones, which is no easy task to replace what many called, and even Matt LaFleur called, the heartbeat of the team. And then bring in Josh Jacobs, and has kind of a lot of that same mentality, but obviously can give you a few more carries game in and game out. And just last year, a few of those times where he just said, give me the ball, I'm going to put the team on my back, don't worry about it, I got this. Even in the playoff game against Philly, man, he did everything he could to try to keep that team in the game. Wasn't enough, unfortunately. They didn't have it that day. But overall, just his energy and his passion is really contagious within the organization. Those were two huge signings, and they are clearly two of the biggest strengths on this team. Number 11 is patience. We're seeing that right now with the Jair Alexander situation. Brian Gutekunst has the patience of a saint. I don't know how he does it. I sincerely don't. If I were general manager, and again, you can be very thankful I am not, I would have said, I want the Jair situation done with. I don't care if we have to take less of a draft pick. I don't care if we have to just release him. I don't care if we have to pay him the $17.5 million. Whatever decision that we make, whether it's trade, keep, or cut, I just want it to be made and done with. Brian Gutekunst says, we're going to wait it out. We're going to see if anything comes along. There's no rush here. There's no deadline up until the start of the regular season. We don't need to rush anything. We are going to take our time. With the Aaron Rodgers trade, it was so annoying at the time. Once everyone knew he was going to be a Jet and all the leverage talk and everything, you just wanted to be like, just make the damn trade. Just make the trade, get it done with. We're all ready just for to see what Green Bay is going to get in return for Aaron to go be a Jet. Like, just get it done. Brian Gutekunst remained patient throughout the entire process, leveraged the Jets, knowing that they basically said he was going to be a Jet, and they got as much as they possibly could in return for that trade and used great patience while doing so. They have been patient through, and going back to Ted Thompson and the organization, through the Brett Favre situation when they had to go through all of that, like just year in and year out. I'm sure they're going to be patient with the Elgton Jenkins situation right now. They have unbelievable patience and just the ability to say, we're going to work through this. And it may take a little bit more time than we would like, but we're not going to rush anything. We're going to make it so that we are, again, going to do what's in the best interest of the Green Bay Packers, and we'll take our time with everything. And it is sometimes frustrating or annoying, and you just want a solution or a resolution, especially as a fan. You're just watching and be like, just make the move. But they remain committed to doing what's best for the organization. And that patience, more often than not, pays off, even if at times, like right now with the Jair situation, where you probably just want an answer in one way or the other, it probably is going to work out better for them in some way because they have remained patient throughout the entirety of this process. And then last but not least is coaching flexibility. What I mean by that is they have two coaches in Matt LaFleur and Jeff Hafley who are incredibly flexible and versatile with their offensive and defensive systems. Meaning, if I'm Brian Gutekunst, I feel like I can get a Colin Oliver and trust that Jeff Hafley is going to find the best way to use him. I could get a corner that's a man corner, a zone corner, a cover two guy, a cover three guy. I can just get him. I can focus way less on what type of scheme they play. I can focus so much less on what position that they're going to need to fit in. And if we already have a player that fits in that position, I can forget about all of that for the most part. And I can just say, I can just draft and sign good football players. And I know that Matt and Jeff are going to figure out the rest. There are times where these coaches on either side can get very specific in exactly what they want. And if you get them with something a little bit different, they will get very frustrated and they will just not play that player or say, screw you guys in the front office. I'm going to play the guys that fit my system. And yeah, it's great that you got me a Colin Oliver. I don't want a designated pass rusher. I want a big 275-pound guy on the edge. And that's, damn it, who I'm going to play. With Jeff Hafley and with Matt LaFleur, you go get him a Savion Williams. And with Matt LaFleur, he's going to find a way to use that guy. No question about it. You go get him a Colin Oliver, he's probably going to find a way. If they are talented enough, if they're as good as they are expected to be, they're going to find ways to utilize those talents. And they're very creative with how they get guys on the field, with how they sub guys in and out. Green Bay's not afraid to do rotations on the offensive line and some different things, get their best five guys out there. They're both very creative with the way that they utilize players. And as a general manager, that makes things so much easier for you rather than having to only fit square pegs into square holes. It just gives you the world as your oyster when you're bringing in players and knowing that even if something's a little bit different, those guys are going to figure out ways to utilize those talents. And I feel really good about just getting them toys and letting them go and play rather than me having to figure out this is your shopping list and this is the only thing that I can go shopping for. Really great chefs will say, just go get me great ingredients and I'll take care of the rest. Lesser chefs might say, I need this exactly. And that's the only way that I can make what I want to make. Again, the best of the best are just like, you give me that, I'll figure out, like, it's like Chopped, right? You give me any four ingredients and I'll figure out a way to make a five-star meal for you. No questions asked. And I feel like, with Jeff Hafley and Matt LaFleur, you have two cooks in the kitchen that you give them good ingredients and they're going to make something special out of it. Those are the biggest strengths in the Packers organization right now. Consistency, the lack of an owner, cash flow, the unbelievable fan base, versatility and depth, youth, culture, the pro personnel department, process and conviction, Xavier McKinney and Josh Jacobs, patience, and coaching flexibility. That is going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Huang, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, Dylan Patscott, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Jake Conner, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkelstinkle, Jen Wright, The Gable Storm, Matt Geiger, and Pack Attack Cast. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.